Welcome back to the Basketball Coaches Roundtable Podcast. Episode 6 features sharpshooting Shane Richards, who finished last season with the Sioux Falls Skyforce, the NBA G League affiliate of the Miami Heat. Welcome to the Basketball Coaches Roundtable. We have a guest at the roundtable today, Shane Richards. Shane is a Manhattan College graduate and a professional basketball player. He's been in the G League, he's been overseas. Joining me at the round table is Jay Griffin from John Jay College and L Green from BCAM High School in Brooklyn. Shane, I want to start it off because I know your journey. I know your journey from high school through college and to where you are now. I want you to talk about the experiences from that journey from high school and your recruitment, you know, for college and then beyond, and how's that shaped your mindset as you, you know, to your approach of basketball in general?
Right. I mean, I'll start off with the recruitment first. You know, growing up, it was always my dream to play for a big school. You know, I always wanted to go to like a Florida, Miami, one of those big top name D1 programs. And as I got onto the AAU circuit, you know, I started to get some buzz from some of these top schools. And what happened was I went through, I believe it was my junior, going into my junior year or senior year, I forgot which one it was, but I ended up having two injuries, which basically took me off a lot of lists of schools, you know, that were recruiting me. Those are the top schools. And I was in a high school, York Prep, which, you know, no one's going to recruit you from a small school like that. Due to the competition and stuff like that. But yeah, I kind of got, you know, screwed over in a way like that. Just, you know, injuries happen. And, you know, when you're a player of my skill set, you know, coaches, college coaches especially, will look at you, and, you know, when they don't see you on the circuit, they'll kind of be like, okay, he's replaceable almost. So I feel like I fell off some of those lists. And I was, it really killed me on the inside too, because like those are my goals and dreams, and it kind of just slipped away at no fault of my own, just kind of, you know, injuries happen, part of the game. And then as it got closer to my senior year, just very, very few teams were calling. I mean, there were a few Division I teams. I actually had an offer from Monmouth at one point, but King Rice and his staff, they wanted me to sign really soon, because obviously that was their first year and they wanted to get things started. So that makes sense for them. You know, he's a great guy. You know, I'm still cool with King, and he's I'm appreciative for him recruiting me as well. But yeah, my Manhattan came in late and just gave me a shot, and I kind of just ran with it. And I think looking back in hindsight, I feel like, you know, probably one of the best decisions I've made. Just because of, if you've told me everything that I've accomplished in those 4 years, I feel like I would take it, you know? What was the first question you said, Coach? I forgot what the first one you said.
No, that's okay. Just how's the experiences from transitioning from high school, going through that recruitment, and then transitioning it to a pro? Like, how has it shaped your mindset and your approach to the game?
Right. Like we were saying before, you know, you kind of started the podcast, like my mindset from a very young age was always a huge chip on my shoulder, because I was always under recruited, you know, overlooked a little bit, just huge chip on my shoulder. And like I said, that was an advantage for me in some aspects, and then also a disadvantage at the same time. So I think a little of that immaturity we're talking about, that's kind of where that came from, just because I wanted to prove everyone wrong. I didn't care who you were. That was my goal. I was going out there to kill you, basically. Didn't matter. And a lot of times it was good, and then there was times where, you know, it backfired as well. But yeah, and as the game kind of progressed, and, you know, I got to the college level, I'd say the biggest difference is just the speed of the game. Speed of the game for sure. Especially when you're not going to one of those high school programs, you know, one of those top, I guess you would call them like what, like powerhouse schools. I don't really know what you would call them, but going to one of those schools where, like, you know, that it's more preparing you for what the college game is going to look like. You know, you're running an offense, you're running, you know, more of a college style in terms of just getting you prepared for the next level. But when I got onto campus, that was the biggest thing for me. The first day I got onto Manhattan College campus was just the speed of the game was just not like unbearable, but, you know, it definitely took you a couple weeks to get adjusted, for sure. Definitely took me a little bit to just, you know, get adjusted to the speed of the game, get adjusted to the offense, which was, I've never had an offense, had to learn, I think, Coach Mass put in my freshman year 150 plays, just an insane amount of plays that, you know, we had to and that's like, you know, knowing both positions, you know, knowing the two, knowing the three. Our defense is probably one of the most complicated defenses there is in college basketball. You know, it comes from that Patino system, which is very effective, but also is very complicated. You know, you have to know a lot of different things. The first I was introduced to really communicating on the court, how important communication was, especially with that defense. And, you know, I thought I communicated well, you know, just as a high school player. You know, we all think we talk until we step on that college court and you realize what talking really requires. So I think those two things definitely, you know, were eye-opening for me in the fact of just getting adjusted to the college game.
How about how's the pro? You know, so I know.
Oh, right.
We can go through this because you were drafted in you know with the G League, and then I think draft day you got traded, you know,
right.
On draft day, and then going into camp that first year, was it first or second day?
I was drafted, I believe, either end of the first round or first pick of the second round in the G League draft. I forgot. It was something like that. It was a high pick. Houston actually traded for my rights on draft day. And I got into camp and, you know, everything was going well. I was, you know, practicing with the team and everything like that, you know, trying to make the roster. And an injury kind of came up and I had to basically sit that year out because of a knee injury that I probably developed during my senior year that I didn't even know I was playing with. So, you know, everything just came to a boil almost just, you know, at the wrong time, just right when I needed, you know, to be at my best, just kind of, I guess the wear and tear kind of came and just ended my season prematurely. But you mean like the difference in the G League and overseas game? Is that where you were kind of?
No. So how's getting drafted and then, you know, getting injured, how'd your mindset, you know, like, you know, what was your mindset? How did that help you get through that year and then into the next season and then overseas and then back?
I'm not even going to lie. That year was the hardest of my life. Just coming out of college, having to be basically bedridden for, you know, however many months I had to recover. I was down in Florida. Because that's where my pops was at the time. I had no friends down here at the time. Just, you know, kind of just isolated by myself. And when you're isolated with yourself and, you know, you really have no communication except, you know, the few people that are in your house, like your family, your immediate family members. And it takes a toll on you for sure. And it wasn't until a couple years later that, you know, that I really got introduced to really the mental aspect of the game, because I think for a lot of players, including myself, excuse me, at the time, you know, we don't take that seriously, especially with everything going on in the world and, you know, everything going on in our daily lives. And I think that's a very underrated part of the game of life and the game of basketball, you know, especially when things go wrong, because things are going to go wrong. I know this past year when I was with Miami's team for a little bit, they brought in their mental coach and stuff like that. And I know they go through a program, the Miami Heat and their G League team, of just going through just, you know, trying to manage your brain's expectations on certain things and trying to quiet your auto thoughts and stuff like that. And I've definitely picked that. I'm actually huge on that. Which in the last like 2 years, I've picked up on that, just because I feel like it's such an underlooked part of the game, really. You know, sports is, I mean, I don't know what percentage it is, but, you know, it's a huge part of any sport, the mental side of things. So, you know, like stuff like meditation, things like that, you know, just reflecting on experiences and those things are very important. And I would honestly advise young athletes to really look into it. You know, I'm not going to sit here and tell you it's going to, you know, make you do this or do that. But, you know, like I said, with everything going on and everyone going through different things, you know, it definitely will help break the thought patterns of, you know, maybe stuff that might get you into trouble or something like that, you know, because we all have those thoughts. And, you know, just trying to quiet that part of the mind is a key component to being successful in anything you do. So, but yeah, that year was tough for me. And you know, you kind of just have to build that mental toughness with yourself, because you have no other choice. You know, you're by yourself. You have no one down here. You can't play the game that you want to do. You can't work. You know, you're kind of just down here waiting for the next season. And I kind of just almost went back to my ways of what got me to be successful. I just ended up working ridiculous. Just my rehab was, everything was just taken like to the T. Everything was perfect. You know, there was no shortcuts. There was no nothing. I was like, I started focusing all my energy and my anger into just being, okay, well, today I'm going to be the best player I can be. If I can't walk, you know what I'm saying, I'm going to do my rehab the best it can be. So I just started trying to perfect each day to the best of my ability of what I could do and what I couldn't do. So, I mean, that's just how I got through that hard time in my life. But yeah, that was definitely one of the more difficult times I've had, for sure.
Jay, you have a question for Shane?
Yeah, I was going to ask, you know, obviously in high school, you were a very, very gifted player. And congratulations on a unbelievable career, high school and in college. I just wanted to kind of ask how your transition was from being, you know, a high level high school player. You know, you kind of touched on the speed of the game going to college, but was there certain expectations maybe that either from you or from the Manhattan staff when you got there to actually like get significant playing time? Like, what did you have to change about your game, if you want to kind of talk about some specifics?
Yeah. Well, like any high school kid, I think I'm going to go in there and be the man, right? That's what we all think. I mean, if you're a good player, I mean, that's what your mindset should be. You know, you want to be the best. You want to be the guy, if you will. And, of course, that was my mentality going in. And then when I got there, you know, you just realize the kind of – everyone also is on your level, or if not better than you as well. I know my first – I struggled my first couple months, man, were struggle city, man. they were not easy by any means. I don't think I played the first 10 games of the season. I really don't. And obviously our best player or leading scorer at the time actually went down with an injury like right in the beginning of the season. And obviously I would never, you know, you never wish any injury, especially on a teammate and brother. You know, it just so happened that he went down, and that kind of opened up an opportunity for me. But what helped me out is that I didn't practice like I wasn't going to get the opportunity. You know what I mean? Like, I practiced like any day could be my opportunity. I was always the hardest working in the gym, always shooting extra, always being ready for whatever. Whatever could happen, and stuff like that happens as part of the game, and you have to just be ready. You know, that people, it's like a cliche, you know, stay ready, you don't have to get ready. You know, people always say that, but they don't really mean it. They don't really work like that's what's really going to happen. And I kind of just fell into a situation because of my work ethic that I was prepared for. Whereas, you know, if I kind of went into it with the mentality of a lot of people, like, oh, I'm not playing, I'm not going to get in, I'm a freshman, they got so many people ahead of me, I'm not going to work hard, I'll work next year. You know, maybe I might not have had the success. So I went from not playing or like playing very, very limited minutes. I feel like I played like maybe 1 minute in the first 10 games of each game, you know, maybe just like garbage time here, going there, get dunked on or something, you know, just some little, you know, here and there. But I actually ended up going from basically not playing my first 10 games to end up winning MAC Rookie of the Year just because I stuck with the process and I knew I had the talent. I just had to put it all together, like Coach Newman was saying, with the mental aspect and then also the physical as well. But you know, just staying ready and really just approaching every day like you are going to get that opportunity. Yeah. And that's what I would say.
I think a lot of guys struggle with that. You know, obviously I'm a D3 coach, and so I see it on a different level, but I think all colleges are similar where kids come in and think that, and I think that's a struggle for a lot of players. One quick follow-up, after you did it, like establish yourself, you went through, you know, basically your conference play once, the second time, you know, kind of when you got established, when the scout was out on you, what kind of adjustments did you make, you know, not talking about staff with you, but you personally, did you have to make any adjustments? Did you see them, you know, once the scout came out on you, did you see people guarding you a different way? I know you were, you know, a big time shooter. So.
Oh, for sure. The teams would, you know, they would stop. They used to run this play for me. It's not even just a play. It was just basically side pick and roll. And I would lift from the corner. And when teams didn't have the scout on me, I would just lift from the corner, and I would basically just be a layup, because teams would tag off the lift. And what they started doing was wherever I was, that they would help off the opposite side, right? So I wasn't a player my freshman year where I created for myself. So a lot of the stuff had to be either off of screens or off of basically catch and shoot. A lot of my stuff was catch and shoot in the corner or, you know, drive and kick. We had great guards who could penetrate, you know, with Emmy, Mike. And if they weren't finding me, I basically wasn't scoring because I needed them to create for me, because one, I knew my role as a freshman. You know, I knew that I was a spot up shooter. I wasn't trying to do stuff that I wasn't capable of or didn't practice, which, you know, a lot of people do struggle with. You know, they don't want to get into that. You know, well, I'm more than a shooter, or I'm more than this, which, yeah, of course we all are. You know, you work on your game and stuff. But that's one thing I say about myself is I always knew my role. We all did, and that's why those teams were successful at Manhattan, because none of us tried to do stuff that was out of our element or trying to be the hero or, you know, just stuff that, you know, you probably shouldn't be doing. You know, we had other guys who could do that better than I could. We had better guys who could come off pick and rolls. I wasn't at a point in my career yet where I was elite at that aspect of the game. So, like I said, like when teams ended up doing that, I had to be okay with playing the decoy certain games. Like there were definitely were games where coaches were like, listen, we're not leaving him, you know? And like I said, I wasn't the greatest at creating my shot at that point in my career. And, you know, almost wasn't expected to. So, you know, there are games where I just had to be the decoy. I might've gotten two shots a game that game, you know, just for the betterment of the team, you just kind of have to deal with that. You know, and that's not something that everyone can do. But, you know, when you have that team first mentality, you know, that's really all that matters at the end of the day, is giving the team the best chance to win.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Shane, so we had Chris Ballerini join late. He's the head coach at DeWitt Clinton in the Bronx, so right near Manhattan. I wanted to follow up on what you said about needing to understand how others created for you to get your shot. So going into that, going into that freshman year, like you were talking, how long did it take for you to understand that concept coming from York Prep, which I think we actually scrimmaged you your senior year and you were the one just creating, you know, like how long did it take you to get that concept that you needed others to create for you? And so it's you, like I would show clips of you at, you know, at lab, like how you sprinted the floor, you know, and got to your shot spot, you know, like the corner waiting and then lifting. But that concept, like how long did it take, or did you just, was that just, you know, innate? And like
it honestly was immediate, because the second I got, like I said, I struggled the first, like all summer I struggled. So my ego got checked right away. You know, it was what it was. I was going up against we do individuals. I'm sure you guys in college do the same stuff. You know, we have individuals, like basically four man groups or however many people group you want to put in an individual. Yeah. And, I was in a group with two seniors, one of the best scorers we've had in Manhattan College history. I was going up against every day, and he would cook me, just straight up. Just he would he knew he was a veteran, a savvy veteran. He knew what he was good at, and there and I a lot of times I would struggle to stop him. And when you get your butt kicked every day like that, you know, it either molds you or it breaks you too. You know, some people can't deal with that. Some people just cannot deal with, you know, an upperclassman basically giving them the business every day. And that's something that I think I used to help, because I looked up to all those dudes, especially every team that I've ever played with, you know, whether I've done it successfully or not, I've always tried to take something away from their game that they were good at. You know, whether I've done that successfully or not, you know, some things work better than others. You know, you take different things from different people, but I've always tried to take something from those guys. And Coach Matt's also, you know, he does a great job of mentally preparing you too. You know, I say that in every time someone asks me about Coach Matt, I always tell him, I said, his greatest strength and the best thing that he did for me was prepare me for the mental aspect of life. just because, like I told you guys earlier, I came in as just a kid with a huge chip on his shoulder. I not necessarily that I thought I knew everything, just, you know, I like I said, I was going out there with basically playing off of anger, trying to prove everyone wrong. And you just can't do that at all times to be successful. So, I mean, just going through that process in the summer, the whole summer process just really kicked my butt, you know, conditioning in the summer, all that stuff. You know, I was never used to any of that stuff from the college atmosphere. And yeah, I feel like right away I kind of just, you know, realized like, okay, you know, this isn't going to be like high school. This isn't going to be where I'm running kind of point forward, doing whatever I want, you know, trying to create off the dribble, doing 100 moves. You know, it's kind of going to be, okay, I told myself, I'm like, all right, this is what we're going to do. We're going to start spotting up, because that's what you do best. You know, we're going to do that. And then as you get more comfortable, maybe pump fake one dribble pull-ups, you know, a couple things like that. But and as coach saw me in practice, you know, he'd give me different things. Maybe let me come off a little bit more in the pick and roll situations and things like that. But building trust with your college coach too is huge, I feel like, because if you don't do it in practice, you know, he doesn't see you working. What makes you think that he should let you do it when the game's in the line? You know, so I feel like that's another thing too, is in practice, just showing that you're the hardest working, showing that you're capable of making those plays too.
Yeah, I think that's like a really tough concept for a lot of players at any level, to understand just the letting, you know, not only the hard work that goes into everything, but letting the game come to them, and that might be having others create something and you creating space for them to do something, so that the ball can come back to you. L, you have a question?
Hey, I'm gonna pause this real quick. Does it sound better?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, Sean, how are you? Nice to meet you again. You actually play with my cousin, Rashawn Storrs.
Oh,
yeah. And I just texted him and I said, I'm on the phone with the cool dude. That's what he always called you. Him and Brandon would always be like, I'm on the phone with Shane. And they were like, oh, okay. So nice to meet you again. I caught a couple of games, but in coaching it was hard. I want to ask you, like, I heard you discuss, like, you wanted to go to big school. You decided to go to the MAC and stuff like that. I went to The Ohio State, and then I transferred to St. Peter's and went to the MAC. And I want you to just discuss, like, and then I went overseas, right? So I went overseas and played. What was the biggest difference for you from going to Manhattan, which has always been a great program, you guys packed the gym in there, to then going overseas? What was your biggest, like, difference? What, describe that transition.
I actually thought that a bigger transition was from the G League actually to overseas. I feel like there was a bigger difference, in my opinion anyway. I've only played one in one country overseas. I was in Poland. But the biggest difference was more, I felt like the college game was a lot more similar to overseas than it was to the G League or the NBA, if you will. just based off of the rules and the style of play, because there's a misconception out there that in the NBA, you know, people, they don't like to play defense. They don't like to play this. And of course, you know, certain players obviously don't, you know, they take some plays off on defense, but that's really not the case. The NBA knows what they're doing. They want higher scoring games, and they make it almost nearly impossible for you to really do that with the defensive 3 seconds rule. And now teams are so good at spacing the floor. You know, you take a team like Houston Rockets, for example, and there's a reason why D'Antoni's one of the best offensive minds in the game. You know, they run five out, and if you're going to sit someone in the paint, they're going to kick it to the corner, and they have guys who shoot over 80% from the corner for that shot, you know? So it's a lot different. The spacing was so much different in the G League than it was overseas. If that answers your question, I'm not sure if it does.
Oh,
I think.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe a follow-up. So what made you come back from the U.S. after one season overseas? Because when I was overseas, I loved it. So what made you come back after just one season?
To be honest, I'm one of those people that I love the G League. You know, G League's not for everyone, just like overseas is not for everyone. I have a bunch of friends that do both, and I get mixed reviews from each. So, I mean, I was more of a G League guy. I liked it a lot more. I liked being in my home country. I liked, you know, being around some of the, basically being in the backyard of the NBA, because that's always obviously my goal. People don't understand how difficult it really is to basically change everything, you know, get up. Yeah, obviously I'm playing the game of basketball. I'm very grateful for that opportunity, but to go to a new country, to have to learn the culture. A lot of people don't speak English. A lot, you know, the currency's different. You know, you might get a bad, you know, you never know with the team, how it's going to be with my coach. Wasn't the greatest at speaking English. So, you know, you get these different things, obviously, overseas. And I know a lot of people that have had great, great experiences overseas. You know, one of the kids I played with in Poland loved it. He's been to like 8 different countries or something like that. He loved it. Not to say that I wouldn't go back overseas, just in my preference, I liked it a lot more here. Just based on those things that I previously stated. But yeah, I think it just is one of those things where I felt like the G League was a better option for me. And I'm not really, I mean, who knows? Maybe I'll go back next year. I really don't know, but that was just my opinion on it.
No worries. I mean, the tax-free money.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The tax-free money is definitely a plus. Like,
right.
Overseas for sure. I don't want to make it sound like I'm hating on it, because there's definitely benefits of both. Just in my preference, I prefer being definitely here more, where other people might, you know, they might go the other way.
Right. Thank you.
Chris, you got a question for Shane?
Hey Shane, sorry for being late, but
all good, man.
Hey, quick question. You were one of the leaders of your college team. How did you deal with some of the other kids who weren't getting as much time, like in a leadership role? You understand, like you're one of the main cogs in this machine. How did you make sure that everyone felt like they were a part of it?
That's a tough question. Because not everyone is going to play, right? We all know that. I think the best part about our team was especially the 2 years that we won it back to back. I feel was the chemistry on that team, right? So we all, like in practice, we used to go at each other, you know, it was competition the entire time. So the 11th man would feel like almost the 6th man at times, you know, even though they might not necessarily get in the actual games, if that makes sense. It's always a tough, that's always a tough thing, you know, how to keep people engaged and how to make sure that they're staying focused and doing their best, even though they might not get the playing time. But I mean, that's kind of just a thing that, you know, you just kind of have to use that mental toughness and just kind of just stay focused. You know, I've seen guys that couldn't do it, you know, and they didn't last, unfortunately. But man, I don't even know. I don't really know, because it's just so hard. You kind of just have to, I would say in practice, you just have to treat it like, you know, you are the starter in the starting lineup. You know, that's kind of my take on it. I mean, like I said, I didn't play my first 10 games, you know, and there was no one really holding my hand telling me, hey man, you know, you're going to play, you know, stay after it. There really wasn't. I mean, in college, you know, obviously it's a team and it's a brotherhood, and but there's times where you kind of just have to man up, you know, you kind of just have to man up and do it yourself in that aspect. I mean, coaches definitely would keep my spirits up and, you know, tell me what I needed to do better and stuff like, and things of that nature. If I was a player who wasn't playing, my advice to them would just be live in the film room, live in the gym, you know, always ask coaches. I do that today in the G League. I ask the coaches every single week. I used to annoy the crap out of them. Just tell them, hey, what can I do better? What am I not doing? What like anything that you see that you know, you would like me to do that I haven't been doing, you know, and they'll tell you what they'll tell you. And you just go from there. A lot of times they'll be like, no, you're doing well. You're doing this. You're fine. Whatever. Keep doing what you're doing. And if that's the case and you don't really get any constructive feedback and they're saying that you're doing the right thing, you just kind of.
Shane, let me ask you this, because Jay asked you a little bit about when you started getting into like conference play in the MAC and, you know, what adjustments you had to make because the second time around or even after your freshman year, you know, you became this known shooter. And now, you know, in the G League overseas, everybody knows, you know, you are a knockdown shooter. What are the things that you must do to either get yourself open and get your shot off, like specifically? And don't feel shy about speaking technically. We're coaches here. We'll understand. You know, like what do you know that you have to do to like get your shot off, and you know, with the maybe minimal time that you have?
Right, that's actually a good question. I learned that too in those first 10 games that I didn't really play much. I remember one of the coaches coming to me and telling me, "Hey man, you got to get your shot off quicker," right? And and my release was pretty quick, I thought, anyway, from high school. I mean, coach, you could speak to that. I mean, I've always had a quicker release. You know, it wasn't a slow motion or anything like that. But, I mean, it was something that I took. You know, I could have been like, oh, this guy don't know what he's talking about, whatever. You know, but I was like, you know what, that's a good point. Let me try that. So what I started doing is I started keeping the ball high. So when I would catch it above my head, you know, passes aren't going to be always in your shot pocket. I started catching the ball up high, and I started trying to do what Clay does. Just catching the ball high, keeping it high, and shooting like that, especially from the corners, and that was my bread and butter. You know, I had a lot of shots able to get off where, if I hadn't worked on those skills, maybe I wouldn't have gotten those shots off, and on top of them, even making them. So, that's something that I did with the gun. You know, I would just have the gun. I would put four balls in the gun, put it on the lowest speed, and I just have them shoot them at me, and I would just do that for hours. Hours upon hours every day, and that's how I got a quicker shot, and that's how I got comfortable just when I catch the ball up here, just you know, lining up the shot and shooting it from there instead of bringing it down trying to gather. And that's an elite skill to develop. You know, I mean, there's very few people even in the NBA that can do that. Clay is one of the best, and there's a reason why he's one of the best. You know, I'm sure he I don't know him personally, but I'm sure he works on that shot every day as well. That's one of the things that I did to speed up my shot. I was always on the gun every day. I mean, high school, I never had the opportunity to really use the gun because we didn't have one. So when I got to college, I took advantage of every single opportunity I have, especially with equipment. I was like, dude, I don't need a rebound. This is awesome. I was rolling the ball out to myself in the gym, just getting shots up that way. I'm like, I can triple the amount of shots in less amount of time. I mean, this is a no brainer for me. So. I basically just lived on the gun.
Gotcha. Jay, you got a question?
Yeah. First, how many shots on the gun?
What I would do is I'm somebody who I always need to be in a competition, whether it's with myself or with someone else. So what I would do is it wasn't a number of shots per se. What I would start doing was I'd pick a number. I'd go five to seven spots, depending on, you know, how much practice we did and stuff like that. And I'd go, all right, well, today I'm not leaving this spot until I make 10 in a row. So okay. 10 to 15 in a row, like I said, depends on how many miles you have on your body at that point. what I'm saying, like anywhere from 10 to 15 in a row from each spot, wouldn't leave the gym until I completed all squats and doing that. Sometimes it would take 25 minutes. Sometimes it would take an hour and 30 minutes. You know, it really depends.
Gotcha. Yep.
On the things. I would do different things like that, just where I could almost track my progression, you know, if that makes sense, you know, because it can get stale just sitting there. And even today, that's a tactic I use. I'm always, it's always a competition between myself, always, no matter what I'm doing. Just whatever I do the week before, I have to beat it the next workout. And if I don't beat it, you know, you kind of get that feeling of, wow, okay, I need to step it up next time. So, I mean, those were things that I was able to do and develop. I've been doing that since middle school, really, just doing those type of things, just trying to keep yourself engaged in the game. Because at the end of the day, it is a game, you know, and it's going to get stale if you don't come up with new ways to get better and compete against yourself.
Great. Thank you. But quick question. So I have two guys, seniors, just graduated. One's 6'8", going to be a stretch four, can really shoot the three. I'm not really concerned about him. I think he can go overseas and make some money. The other one, we actually had a Division I transfer come down, had an awesome year, similar body type to you. What advice or tips can you kind of give him as he's trying to, you know, make money playing overseas or here or whatever? If you can give some specific tips or some advice.
Well, what kind of players is he? Kind of more of like easy two?
No, we played him at the wing. We didn't really traditionally play. We played a lot of four and one out. We played a lot of 3-2. So he was always on the wing. Doesn't really handle that great. But big body, 6'5". When he gets downhill, he can do some damage. He can finish above the rim, good in transition, and he's a good spot shooter. You know, good spot up guy, good catch and shoot.
I would just say, like, I don't think there's an exact science, right, to anything. So what works for me may not work for anyone else. But I would just say, obviously, live in the gym. That's a no brainer. But just keep working on the things that you're great at or what his strengths are. Obviously keep perfecting those. And then at the same time, I would each day I would add something that I'm, you know, maybe not the best at. So for me, it was ball handling. So every day I would do ball handling. People thought I was crazy. I would be doing ball handling in the corner of the gym. People would be playing 5-on-5. What's wrong with this kid? You know what I'm saying? But I had to get it in somehow and get in that work that I wasn't, that skill set that I wasn't yet comfortable with. And I think a lot of times a lot of kids are like, oh, that's not the cool thing to do, or, you know, that's not, I mean, whatever word you want to use, but at the end of the day, who cares? you really just gotta work on those skills that, you know, maybe you're not the best at as well. So I would say keep doing what he's good at, keep working on those things, and then at the same time maybe add in another thing that might be a weakness to his game. You know, obviously I don't know him personally, and I don't know his skill set, but
How was finding like an agent? Did you have just a lot of opportunities kind of fall at your feet, or did you have to actually go out and send your tape out there?
I actually had a lot of people hit me up. I had a fairly good senior season, so I mean there was a couple of agents that reached out to me, and I asked my college coach for help. You know, some people go that route, some people don't, and some people like to do it themselves. You know, I wanted an opinion of someone I trusted that's been through the business, that has helped other professionals, you know, get to their goals and stuff like that. So, you know, I chose the route of letting my coach, you know, help me interview some of these guys and pick who was better, you know, just from that perspective. But I also know people who have done it themselves, and, you know, they're successful as well.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Elle, you're up.
Oh, okay. Hey, anything you learned from RGV, a more experimental G League team? Like any challenges that you faced in the G League that you weren't ready for?
Not particularly any challenge I wasn't ready for. What I learned. The my favorite thing about the G League is is everyone's an expert. Like, the coaches have been around real pros. You know, that can't be said for a lot of people. So these guys have coached James Harden. They've coached Chris Paul. They've, you know, how much impact they've had on them, I mean, who knows? But I'm saying they've been around that type of elite player. So if you're going into that experience thinking you know everything, you're a fool, because they've been around all that talent. And my biggest thing was, in my college career, Coach was saying earlier about, you know, the body type and stuff, we didn't really have like a strength program. So when I got to RGV, I met their strength coach, who hands down the best strength coach I've ever worked with. Shout out to Eric Lang. That guy, like, literally would just make me plan after plan after plan. And he's the main reason too why I was able to recover from my surgery that year that I had to sit out, because he, while dealing with the team, he was able to progress my program every 4 weeks, every 3 weeks, you know, and stuff like that. And I just took in that information from those people that are the best at what they do. And I didn't really think that there was too many things that, like, you wouldn't be able to adjust to in the G League. I do think that some of the things are a lot tougher for a lot of other people, like, especially if you're an NBA pro and you're down there for a little bit, you know, it might be hard to fly in a middle seat from, you know, Texas to Los Angeles for like 6 hour flight, you know, like stuff like that, where, you know, you're used to those luxuries, and you have to kind of go back a little bit. So it's a lot harder for some of those guys. Some of the travel is obviously not ideal. They've actually done a lot better in recent years, you know, not having as many back-to-backs, not having flights at 3 a.m, you know, than having a game the next day. But yeah, that's probably the biggest difficulty. But I mean, at the end of the day, that's not even that bad. I mean, just traveling and having to play the next day, those things are just, you know, if you're a basketball player, you know, you get over that real quick and just kind of just adjust to what's going on.
Just a follow up. You mentioned your injury. You know, I remember getting injured, and that's what ended my pro career. Is there anything that you can tell, like, the athlete that gets injured, how they can just, you know, stay positive, be confident while they're sitting? Because that's the hardest part, sitting, not being able to do anything. And I know that, like, I was with the Sparks, I blew my knee out, and then I just went overseas, and then I became a teacher. That's my story. So just anything for this generation right now, because injuries are, you know, real. So,
especially this generation, right? We're obsessed with our phones. We're obsessed with, you know, likes or whatever you want to call it. I think it's good. I think a lot of us don't experience truly being by ourselves and our thoughts, right? We're always preoccupied with whatever, our phones or this or our girl or whatever. You know, we truly don't spend enough time with ourselves and our thoughts. And that was one thing for me where I had no choice. That was what I had to do. I was sitting in a bed. I couldn't even walk, you know, don't have really a lot of friends out here. And it just got me into a habit of, you know, I was just planning. There was no distractions. Use it as a time to just tunnel vision of what you want to do, whether that's, you know, get back being a professional, or, you know, choose the route you did. Maybe go overseas or become a coach or whatever you want to do, but become razor focused in that field. And that was great for me. And I use that to this day. Every summer I go, it's great that I'm down here in Florida, because it's isolation. People ask me about the quarantine all the time. I'm like, I'm living my normal life. Like, in the off season, I come down here to isolate myself anyway. So, I mean, if the gyms are open, I'd be living my normal life right now. People ask me, they're like, really, really? I can't believe it. I'm like, yeah, that's what I do anyway to prepare myself for the season. So I think, not to say that you should follow my strategy, but I mean, that's just something that I think is important. I think just with being without distractions and just being tunnel vision to whatever your goal is something that people just can't do nowadays. And I don't know if it's because of social media. I don't know if it's because of maybe people telling, I don't know. I don't even have the answer. I just think that that's such an important thing of just blocking out the distractions, blocking out the nonsense that at the end of the day isn't going to benefit you, right? Like, I remember, just a quick story real quick. I remember, like, when I stopped using, like, when I came to the realization that, like, wow, like I have to cut down on my phone usage. Like I'd be waking up in the morning and the first thing I would do would be checking my phone, and I would ask myself one day, and I was just like, why am I doing this? Like, why is the first thing I do in the morning check my phone, you know, go on Instagram, whatever it would be. It's like, I asked myself, like, how is that benefiting me in any way? And it's not, you know what I'm saying? A lot of times it would get me annoyed because I'd see something I didn't like, you know, and I'd start my day on the wrong foot just because I'm looking at some stupid thing. So what I do now is I literally limit my usage of that. Because I think social media is such a good tool if you use it and don't let it use you. I think so many people, especially in my generation and my age, they let social media use them, and it becomes like an obsession, and they get caught up in this false sense of reality, which really isn't reality, because at the end of the day, no one's posting on social media the bad things that happen in their life. Who's going to do that? You know, so you're not getting your perception isn't reality at that point. You know, it's kind of just, you're living in this false reality. So I would say especially to people going through that injury process is focus in, be laser focused to whatever you want to do. You know, whether it be, like I said, coach, go back to overseas, go back to professionally, become something totally different. Just become razor focused and learn how to be alone with your thoughts instead of trying to escape with all this technology that is at our fingertips nowadays.
Thank you so much for that response.
Of course.
Chris.
So Shane, I've been had a lot of downtime like everyone else in the world. So I've been looking at a lot of NABC videos and stuff like that. And one guy I came across was Noel Gillespie, the coach of the Atlanta G League team, the Atlanta Hawks team. And what he was talking about was delay, or A to B, the offense. Are you guys implementing that as well? I guess it's not after a fast break. It's your regular offense where they go A to B, or delay.
Delay is very common in the G League and the NBA. Basically what it is, I know Houston for a fact runs it. I know Miami runs it. Those are the two organizations I was with. Basically, are you asking how is it run, or?
No. So I get it, but as a player within that system, do you like it? Is there anything that, because I'm trying to, like, my offense has never been that great. You know, I've been more of a defensive coach, and I'm fascinated by this whole five out, A to B, spread the court. And as a player, do you like being in that type of offense? And where do you see, like, if you could just expand on that.
I loved it for my skill set personally. I mean, I loved it because anytime you space the floor, that's going to benefit me. So I was fortunate enough to play with dudes with my second professional year after I sat out, my first year with Houston, their G League team. I was able to play with, I was playing with legit NBA point guards. I had Monte Morris, who's a sixth man off the bench for Denver Nuggets right now. Tony Rowan, ex starter in the NBA, Philadelphia 76ers first round draft pick. We had a lot of dudes who, and there's others as well that I'm blanking on, but you know, we had legit NBA dudes who were able to come downhill and find me. You know, that's the only reason why I was successful my first year. You know, we have dudes like that, and especially when you go five out and you do that, especially, I don't really know how it would work in college because you're allowed to sit in the paint. So I mean, I haven't really experimented with that or been a part of that in the college game, but I know in the NBA game it works so well, because when when the floor is that space, you can't help. I mean, you can, but I mean, you're going to get burnt somehow, some way. I mean, you have to pick and choose what you're going to give up, and that's why so many NBA teams run it, is because when you throw it into your big, right, and then you can either pick either side, so you can't scout for it. So there's so many different reads off of what you could do, right? So you can, we had a thing in Houston where, you know, there would be calls, like we had delay up, delay down, you know, we have different stuff. But I mean, basically it's just reading off of what you want to do. So you might throw it to the big and go set a down screen, or you might get an up screen, or you might, you know, set a screen for the big to come downhill and then hand off. You know, there was just so many different reads off of it. And that's why NBA teams like to run stuff like that, just because there's so many different reads. You can't prepare for it, really. I mean, you can, but I mean, there's so many different options out of that set that when you have players with the high IQ that a lot of NBA teams do, that's why those plays are so effective, and that's why those plays are run a lot, especially teams like Houston who have Harden, who can come downhill, and he's one of the smartest players in the NBA, especially on the offensive end, when he's able to make those decisions and, you know, whether he's going to hit the lob or hit the corner when he's coming downhill. So I don't know how it would work in college with being able to basically clog up the paint and stuff like that. But I know in the NBA it's so effective because of the spacing. And then another thing I would say too is you can't run that unless you have high IQ guys. You know what I'm saying? Because I know, you know, and that was one of my strengths in college. You know, I wasn't the most athletic, but I was more of a high IQ guy. And our team had a lot of high IQ guys those 2 years we won. So we could kind of run a little more complicated systems, if you will. You know, we didn't run that per se at Manhattan, but I'm saying we could have if we wanted to. But a lot of times college coaches want to put in these offenses that are great offenses. But I feel like you have to tailor make a strategy based around the players you have. So if you don't have players who can make multiple reads, right, maybe that might not be the best offense for your situation, right? So if you don't have a guy who can be like, okay, well, this needs to be a tight curl, this needs to be a long curl, okay, maybe I'm going back door here. You know, if you don't have players who are robotic, if you will, it's a lot harder to run those type of offenses.
Are your coaches just teaching you in the film room? Are they just sitting down going, you know, you should have curled that, you should have, you know, faded?
Certain in college for sure. That's all we did was watch film in college. But in the G League too, they'll show you, you know, what you could have done. Maybe you might have done this. It's a lot less micromanaging in the G League, just because, you know, they expect you to be professionals and you are a professional. But it's kind of more your read in the G League, and then if they think maybe you should have done something different, then they'll let you know. But I know. When I was in college, that's all we did was watch film. We'd go over different reads, but the offenses were a lot, not simplistic, just a lot more. Like structured.
Structured
to the point where you had certain reads. Of course, like there was a lot of plays where Coach Max put in that, you know, we read off of each other, and you know, we went off of our each other's strengths. Like I know me and Rashawn had a chemistry that we used to go off each other, me and Tyler, same thing, point guards I played with. But it was more structured, like, okay, this is what you're looking for. If you're not looking for this, you're going here. You know, where in the G League, it's like, okay, if you're not looking for that, you can go here, but then you can also dribble handoff here, and then you can go back door. You know, it's a lot more options within the set of what they're trying to run. So they give you multiple options, where in college, it might be like one or two. In the pros, it's like, okay, you can do five or six things off of this one set. And that's what I think the biggest difference was.
No, that was fantastic. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
Because I'm thinking, man, I got my high school team. It's not even college, right? They could still pack it in and we could be in serious trouble, right? If we're trying to run all the reads, you got to be able to shoot the ball, right? I think you really got to be able to shoot the ball.
For sure. You got to tailor make your offense to the talent you have around you. I would say I'm not a coach, but I mean, that would be my advice.
Yeah. Thank you.
Shane, I have one last question for you and Chris, and, you know, you answering Chris's question, you kind of brought up the film. So how much has film and analytics changed your approach to how you were practicing?
Film. This is how much film we used to watch, and you could ask your cousin Rashad, he'll tell you the same thing. We used to watch hours of film, just of practice. He would film practice, and we'd be watching practice, just different things that we would be doing. You know, I think the biggest thing for me with film was watching how players were guarding me. That's where it helped me the most. So a lot of times how I would get my shots, especially as I got older in my career at Manhattan, was a lot more double screen, single screen actions, like coming out either side, floppy action. And a lot of times, you know, everyone has tendencies. So, you know, teams were going up and through, we'd show how, you know, I need to fade to the corner, or if teams were following, I need to be able to, you know, tight curl and go to the go to the basket as well, different things of that nature. I know that that helped me a lot, just knowing when to do what, right? Because as a high school kid, I mean, yeah, you know what a fade is, you know what a curl is, but do you really know when to do them? You know, it takes a special type of player to really come into college with that kind of knowledge of the game already, you know? I mean, I was good at coming off screens, but, you know, saying I didn't really know, not that I didn't know when to do it, it just was when guys got physical with me and I couldn't get what I wanted off the first read, how am I going to counter that, right? So when I was a freshman and I was going up against these seniors, I came in a buck 85 soaking wet. So, I mean, dudes would just body me off of my path and I had to find different ways maybe to set it up better. Or maybe, all right, so if they're going to jump top side, you have to find a different way to still be effective on the offensive end. And I think film definitely helped me with that. Also defensively, for sure. Like I said, our defense was one of the most complicated things. And the funny thing is that people who have been there 4 years still don't know everything about it. You know what I'm saying? Like it's such a defense that is so effective if all five are on the same page. It's one of the best defenses and has been for some time. I know with Louisville had tons of success with that when Pitino was at the helm, and we had a ton of success all 4 years of my college career on defense when you have all five guys on the same page. But it's one of those defenses though, is that you don't have one guy on the same page, you're giving up a three, you know? And it's just one of those things that, you know, you just get better off in time, and it takes a lot of high IQ guys to run. But yeah, just going through all the things. But we also lived in the film room also, and I would always be going to get extra film room with the assistant coaches all the time. I'd be going in there because I wanted to play as a freshman. You know, some, like I said, some people don't, not that they don't want to play, but they kind of just give up, like, all right, whatever, I'm, you know, there's so many people in front of me, I'm gonna chill, you know, whatever, I'm gonna go talk to, you know, whatever they're gonna do, talk to girls, go to the calf, whatever they're doing. You know, I wanted to play and I wanted to stay ready. And like I said, I actually got an opportunity that I didn't even think I was going to get. You know, it happened that our leading scorer at my position went down, you know, and I stepped into that role and was ready for it. And a lot of, and I don't know if a lot of people would be ready for that, but I know that I took the preparation just for that moment that, you know, my number might get called. I never know when, and you just have to be ready. And that's the same thing in the G League too. Like, my first year, I never knew when I was going to go in. I never knew if I was going to play 20 minutes, 1 minute, never get in the game. You know, you just have to be ready because they send down these NBA guys and they're going to play over you. So, I never knew when I was going in the game, which is one of the hardest things, especially for a shooter, to get into a rhythm. But, I mean, there's no excuses. At the end of the day, you're professional. You have to do what you have to do. You know, whatever you have to do to get into that mindset of trying to just be prepared and staying ready at all times. I think that I learned that in college, and it's carried over to my professional career for sure. Because, like I said, you never know, in the G League especially, you never know when you're going in the game, right? And the coaches sometimes don't even know, because they don't even know who they're going to have for the game. They might send down the assignment players that day, 2 hours before the game. We've had that happen multiple times. They've sent down their assignment players multiple times, like an hour before the game. Like, oh yeah, so-and-so is playing today. All right, you're not starting. Like, okay, that's just how it goes in the G. So you just have to be ready for that at all times. You never know what's going to happen. And that's where I talk about the mental toughness and being able to stop your auto thoughts, because that can mess with, that's going to mess with anyone, especially if you think you're coming into the game getting 20 minutes. Turns out so-and-so is coming down. You're not going to get five. You know, you're lucky if you get on the court. You know, and that happened to me a lot of times. And, you know, that's just something you have to deal with. You know, you get used to it, obviously, but, you know, it's tough.
Yeah, you really have to have that growth mindset. Funny story to end. Shane, I think it was your senior year, and Big Sean Hicks put a team together at Round Ball up at Gauchos. I don't know if you remember this, and I was coaching, so we had you know, a couple others, and championship game, Chris McCullough comes aboard, and it's a tie score. I know whoever we were playing had somebody on the other team, and you were just like, I need to take it to him. I need to cook this guy. I don't know who it was. Tie score, end of the game, and I draw up a play for you, and Sean goes, we have Chris McCulley here. You got to give him the ball. And I was like, that's the wrong move. So
hey, man, remember that's kinfolk too, Chris.
Okay. Okay. No, it has nothing to do with Chris. He gets the ball. He tries some finger roll at the buzzer, rims out. We lose. But I think this speaks to like your drive and that chip on your shoulder that you were talking about. As we were collecting the trophies and round ball, you got like those 5-foot trophies, you know, like ridiculous. And we get this like 5-foot second place trophy, and you walk over and you're like, you know, I think you gave it to me. You gave it to Sean. It's like, I don't take second place trophies, you know? I think, you know, some people can look at that as like arrogance. And I see that as just this competitive fire of not being, you know, like not getting what you wanted to get, like not, you know, not obtaining the goal that you set out to get, you know? So I didn't see that as arrogance, you know, like, you know, a lot of people I think would, but no, that it speaks to your drive and that winning mentality and that chip on your shoulder that you have. So I don't know if you remember that at all, but
I don't exactly remember that, but I've done that on multiple occasions. So I definitely take your word for it.
Maybe positive influence a couple times also.
For sure.
Right. Sure. Right. No. Shane, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you guys, man. I appreciate it.
You know, I appreciate you tremendously, especially now seeing where we started our relationship, very, very rocky as a player coach, you know, and then just to see how you developed as a person and not, you know, as a player is, you know, 360 degrees from the freshman that I knew in high school, and it's really great, and you know, really impressed and proud of how you are going through life, you know.
I appreciate that, man. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Shane.
Yeah.
Man,
guys.
All right. Stay safe. Thanks. Stay healthy, thanks, Shane. All right.
You guys too, man.
Absolutely. All right. We look forward. What you know what's up for next year yet?
Man, I don't think anyone knows what's up for next year at this point with everything going on. I think I have to talk to my agent soon and we'll see, you know, what he has in the works. But I mean, I think it's going to be a little while until people really know what's going on this year. I mean, which is a shame, but it's just, like I said, it's kind of something he's kind of got to roll the punches with, you know. It is what it is, and there's not much you're going to do to change
it. Yeah.
So,
but
gotta be patient.
Contract was just through the end of this year.
G League contracts are only 1 year anyway. Or they
okay.
Honestly, they're not even 1 year. They're basically day to day. They can cut you whenever they feel like it, and you're not getting paid the rest of the year. You're getting paid for how long you've been there. So, that's how that works. Overseas is also same thing. Unless you sign a multi-year deal, you can do that overseas. But the G League, they don't do that.
Right. All right. And so what's the interest that you have? Anything right now, or you don't know because of everything's an unknown?
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Everything's an unknown. I don't even think they have the gyms open. I know in New York they don't. I mean, down here they're starting to open up things up, but you know, Florida plays by their own set of rules, so they do their own stuff down here. I'm not really sure exactly when things are going to get back to normal. Obviously, I mean, I'm praying that things, you know, things start looking up, and you know, we can start, you know, getting back to, you know, daily life and those types of things. Like I said, I'm not opposed to going back overseas. You know, obviously my goal is the NBA one day, you know what I'm saying? I'm confident. I know that I have the talent to compete with those guys. And, you know what I'm saying? I've proved that on multiple occasions. I just, you know what I'm saying? It's just about being in the right spot, right time, right opportunity, you know, getting that shot. And, you know, I think just staying after, like I said, just always trying to be ready. That's all you can do. You know, you got to control what you can control, and you know, just might have to get a couple breaks here and there, but that's basically all we can do as players, coaches, whatever profession you're in, you just kind of got to stay with it. Like we've been saying this whole podcast, you know, just staying after it and staying ready is really the only thing we can do.
Gotcha. Hey, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you guys, man. It's my honor. Thank you.